ओम ज्ञानचने वन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Draupadi is continuing her arguments for not killing Ashwatthama. Here she is referring to the grief that would be caused to Ashwatthama's still existing family members if he were to be killed. Now, the consideration here is not simply that Ashwatthama, his own fate, but how his fate is connected with others, especially his, naturally the son, his fate and feelings for him are very much. Okay, so the fate of Ashwatthama, the fate of the son is intimately linked with that of his mother. Even they have, the scientists that meant to check everything out, so they've done such nasty experiments as taking some kittens away from the cat to the mother and taking them away in some submarine a long way away and killing them. And they have some electrodes connected to the mother cat who's some thousands of kilometers away, and she experienced some grief. Some psychic connections. I saw once. This was quite more than 20 years ago. I was traveling in some villages in Bangladesh. There was one young boy with me. He was about 11 years old at the time. He'd married and living in Mayapur. So he was crying all day. Why? No. I was asking why he was crying. He didn't reply. He just went on crying and crying and crying.
Then after a month or two, we visited his home village.
So this concept is
because there's a whole dynasty coming down for so many years, in which generation after generation, they produce
pious, highly pious, competent, righteous. Yesterday we were discussing dharma. So highly righteous and religious devotees of the Lord, generation after generation after generation. So in Vedic culture, a person's fate is very much connected with that of his family. It's not like in the modern age, I don't know about here, but in other countries, in like England or America, that they want to get the kids out of the home as soon as they have a home. Then they want to kick them out as soon as possible. You're 18 years old, you're still at home, get out. What are you doing here? Get out, get your own place. Or around the other way, the kids say, I'm not going to stay here, I'm going to get out as soon as I can. So no, just the family members living together as some kind of mutual social, or convenient social arrangement, but no feeling for each other. Whereas in the Vedic culture, and even today in India, we see it's very strong. Of course, that's breaking down now under the effect of modern life, modern ideas. Modern means rascal. It's a quote from Prabhupada. So, but traditionally, the very strong family tie is there, which is, there's something good about that if it's for uplifting the family members, that you have to act in a manner that is befitting our family. You can't act like a rascal. You have to act properly. It will be a disgrace otherwise, and you have to be a good devotee. You have to be a good citizen. Prabhupada said that in one good thing about the Western countries is that they don't have strong family ties. So it's easy to be devotees. But as far as social stability is concerned, it's not very good. And even when you become a devotee, then it's good to have strong family ties, in as much as, in other words, devotees, they marry, it's good to have strong family ties so that the children feel attached to them and they want to please their parents by becoming good devotees. So in that, if the family tie is strong in that sense, then it's very good to have the feeling that I should be a worthy representative of my family, and you know, I have to be a good devotee, otherwise it doesn't look good for my family, it'll be a disgrace for my family members. So such social pressure is good. Sometimes we hear that, well, you know, there's so much pressure in our temples, but there's pressure everywhere. If you go to a factory, it's not that, you go to work in a factory, it's not that, you know, well, if you want, you can do some work, and if you don't, you can just, you know, sit and look at the machines all day. No, you have to work. There's pressure. Or in an office, there's pressure to work. Even in many offices, it's you're expected to work. Even the office closes at 5 o'clock, you're expected to stay till the work is done. Even if it's 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night, there's that pressure is there. So in our temples also, there's social pressure. But the pressure is how to surrender to Krishna. If you don't follow the principles of Krishna consciousness, then the pressure will be, what? Why you're not following? So this pressure is good. Prabhupada said that our movement is a pushing movement. He said that my spiritual master is pushing me, I'm pushing you, and you should push others. But that pushing means to push in the direction back to Godhead. We have to be careful how we push also, as Prabhupada states here, we have to be careful in dealing with worshipful family members. So this can be applied to our devotees also. Devotees are worshipable. We're praying, Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Vibhashindu Vyavacha Patitanam Pavane Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. We offer our respectful obeisances to Vaishnavas. So it shouldn't be done simply as a formality. Okay, Pancha Kalpa, what the hell are you doing? Not like that. Of course, there may be chastisement also. That's also part of dealings. But we have to be careful in dealings, because apart from the one factor is that a person, he feels that I should act in a way that I will be upholding the proper tradition. That's one factor. Devotees should feel I should behave properly. Otherwise, it doesn't look very good. I'm supposed to be a follower of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I'm supposed to be a representative of Srila Prabhupada. So it doesn't look very good for Prabhupada's good name if his followers, they don't live up to the high ideals that he has espoused. So that consideration should be there. That I should act properly, at least out of gratefulness to our acharyas who have set the good example for us. They've taken the trouble to lift us out of the maya of maya. You know what maya means? It means like dirt. M-I-R-E. The maya of maya. They've lifted us out of the dirt of maya. So it is our duty to act in such a way that will be upholding their good name. And then another factor is that in dealings with others, we have to consider that there are personal feelings also. Now, this consideration of the feelings of others, there's been quite a lot of talk in that about this in our movement. And often there's discussion of so many different psychological theories and so many different things. But really, in dealing with others, how should we deal with others? How should we do anything? We should do everything according to what? Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Shastra gives directions how to deal. Very detailed, actually. We'll find in Manu the description of Varnashram Dharma, that even who is respectable by who? It stated that even a kshatriya, 90 years old, with grey hairs all over his body, even then he must bow down to a young brahmana boy. Even he's just an infant, he could be his great-grandson. So these are considerations within Varnashram Dharma. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established that above all these considerations, not only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the scriptures established that above all the considerations of Varnashrama, the Vaishnavas, they are achyuta gotra. That means that there are different gotras which are considered very respectable. Here we see that the name is given, in the next verse, the name is given Gotami. That is the name given for Kripi, that she's coming in the dynasty of Gautama. So you'll find even now the people, respectable families in India, that they'll say that they're descended from different rishis. They're in different dynasties. They can trace, they'll have the names going back for thousands and thousands of years of their forefathers.
Mm.
So these are material considerations, but the cultured family, there's something to be said for it even now, even though we find that the Brahmin class in India, they're mostly engaged in business, law, doctors, or whatever, something like this. But still, in many of them, some culture is there. But still, even above that is the Achyuta Gotra, the family of Vaishnavas, those who identify themselves in the family of Achyuta, Krishna, who never falls down. Achyuta means one who never falls down. So one may be born in a respectable family, but his behavior may not be very good. He may be fallen down. But if one follows Achyuta, Achyuta never falls down. So one who follows Achyuta, Krishna, he never falls down. So his position is more glorious. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very strongly emphasized this point and was therefore considered revolutionary that Jata Kula Nahi Krishna Bhajan. Then he said that Nicha Jati Nahi Krishna Bhajan Yoga Shatkul Vipra Nahi Bhajan Yoga Jai Bhaji Shri Bhara Bhakti Hino Cha Krishna Bhajan Nahi Jatkul Adi Vicha. He said that even if one is born in a very high class Brahmana family, it doesn't mean that he's necessarily competent to worship Krishna. That's not in itself a qualification. On the other hand, someone who's born in a rejected family, if they worship Krishna, they are more glorious than someone born in a simply in a high family. Because in worshiping Krishna, there's no such consideration. Everyone is eligible. Everyone is welcome to serve Krishna. This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was somewhat revolutionary in preaching this principle, even though it's a Shastri principle. And Prabhupada also, when he went to the Western countries, he was preaching, and even when he came back to the West, when he came back to India with his Western followers, even at that time, most of the Brahmins in India, most of the traditional Brahmin caste, they protested. And how can you give the Brahmin threat to these Western people? They're all lechers. How is it possible? They'd say to us, why are you wearing this orange clothes? You shouldn't wear it. You're not. It's not proper. You shouldn't do it. You go back to your country and do whatever you like. And next life, if you're born in India as a Hindu, then you can do this. They used to say. But now their attitude has changed. And mostly the people in India, with a few exceptions, they're very pleased with Prabhupada's mission, what he has done. So anyway, the point is that anyone from any background, they can take to Krishna consciousness. That is the conclusion of Shastra. But we see that we say Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. So Sadhu, there are different lines. There are two different kinds of parampara. One is Vamsha parampara and one is Shrota parampara. Vamsha parampara means the parampara coming down through family, the cultural traditions which are passed down. The Shrota parampara means that which is by hearing, that one hears from a guru. The Shrota parampara is generally concerned with spiritual knowledge, and the Vamsha parampara is generally concerned with social dealings and culture, which is not divorced from spiritual knowledge. In Vedic culture, the whole culture is based on spiritual uplift. So we don't have that. We have this, when we were saying everything should be based on Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, but Shastra, in terms of social dealings, that deals with how Brahmanas and Kshatriyas should interact, and Vaishnavas, how they should interact. But we don't have the traditional culture as a background, how to behave among, like I was saying yesterday, the main forms of behavior that are extensively delineated in Shastra are those of the Brahma Dharma, the behavior of Brahmanas, then the Raja Dharma, the behavior of Kshatriyas, and Stri Dharma, the behavior of women. So this traditions we don't have, and even the traditional setup for ashrams and families, we also don't have that. Traditionally, families means extended family, that all the brothers of one father, they all live together, and then there'll be so many great aunts and older people, younger people, all aunts and uncles, all mixed up living together. So that family we don't have, the family traditions. And even the ashram setup, the Prabhupada setup, is quite different to traditional ashrams in India, for which Prabhupada was criticized also. Many people are willing to criticize Prabhupada in so many different ways. But he did it for the sake of spreading Krishna consciousness. And, well, the obvious main difference is that Shastra Srimad Bhagavatam states, Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandanto Guru Ritam, that a brahmachari should live in the Gurukul, means of the Guru, for the benefit of the Guru. He should act for the benefit of the Guru. Acharan Dasavan Nicho. He should act like a menial slave, actually. Acharan Dasavan Nicho. Or is it Sudhira Guru Sohrida? He should have an attitude of very strong friendship for the Guru. Friendship means that he acts for the Guru's interest, not that he has an equal status. That's already nullified by the status of Acharan Dasavan Nicho. He's a humble, just like a slave. So the difference is that there's no mention in the Shastra of Brahmacharini Guru Kulit. That the Brahmacharini, you'll hardly find this word. It's there, but it is not referred to, because women, that's given in the next verse, Pati Devata. That Janani, Pati Devata. Janani means mother, and Pati Devata means that they accept their husband as worshipable. So this is one of the very big difference, that men and women are living together in an ashram, although traditionally the whole idea of a brahmachari ashram is that you don't live with brahmacharinis or women, or you're cut off from that somewhat. Although the guru in many cases will be a householder. When we say guru, it means he'll be a teacher, they'll live in the forest. But once Prabhupada was asked about devotee said to Prabhupada that the Vedic culture, well, that means in the villages. And Prabhupada said, no, the real Vedic culture is actually in the forest. And not even in the village. Because the village, there would be so much forest. Even all over Europe there used to be. Even in India until recently, there was so much forest. So the village, the people who live in the village, you'll find in the description in Shastra that even the village is considered to be in the mode of passion. And the forest is in the mode of goodness. So the rishis, the Gurukul means would be part of the Rishikul, where the rishis live. So they would live in the forest, but close to the village, because the brahmacharis would come to beg. And the people from the village, when they get too much in the mode of passion, they go to the rishis in the forest and ask for some solution to all their problems. So the brahmacharis are actually living in the forest. I know that the rishis, they may also be brahmacharis, but in many cases married. We find just like the name Gautami is given. So Gautam, among most of the rishis, they're mostly married, but they'd be living with their wives. But their wives would also be rishi patnis, not not putting on lipstick and all this kind of thing. They'd be living a very renounced way of life. Brahmanis. They would be assisting their husband in performing austerities. Even though they're married, they're living in the forest and performing austerities for the sake of spiritual realization. So the brahmacharis would be living in a very protected atmosphere, protected in as much as they'd be going as young boys, and they would grow up in an atmosphere in which their sexual desires would not be provoked by interaction with the opposite sex. And the young girls, they would also be protected That means they've been carefully monitored, and at a young age they've been married, and there's another point of Vedic culture to see that it's considered very important. We see that, yesterday I was saying also Arjuna, how he was, one of his arguments for not fighting that he gave at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, before Krishna started to speak Bhagavad Gita, is that if all the men are killed, then there'll be no one to protect the women, and that will lead to degradation of society. So we see that Arjuna was very much concerned that women would be unprotected. Well, that's one reason why Prabhupada accepted women into his ashrams in the West. He didn't allow it in India, actually, because in India that would not be that would be considered very improper. He didn't allow unmarried women to live in his ashrams in India. But he allowed it in the West because he saw that so many young women at that time, and now young and older also, they're seriously interested in Krishna consciousness, but they're not protected at home. There's no proper atmosphere for them at home. So Prabhupada, he also gave facility. Once, many years ago, one of my godbrothers, who was recently visiting here, this country, as a sannyasi, this was many years ago, he told me that he'd asked Prabhupada, he said that, Prabhupada, we have so many women, it's just such a disturbance in our temples. So Prabhupada said, they have come to Krishna, I cannot reject them. Prabhupada agreed, he said, yes, there is a problem for the Brahmacharis. Come to Krishna, I cannot reject them. Now, the point I'm coming to here is that all our dealings, all our activity, everything should be done according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. But there's no Shastric guidelines for men and women living together in ashrams. So what are we supposed to follow? Then we have to come to Guru, because Guru means who gives the who is competent to explain Shastra, how we should behave according to the particular circumstances, because he's supposed to know not only the letter of the law but the spirit of the law. Prabhupada allowed men and women to live together in ashrams because the purpose of an ashram is for advancement and cultivation of Krishna consciousness, and Prabhupada wanted to deliver as many conditioned souls as possible back to Godhead. So he saw the necessity for doing that. Another thing Prabhupada wrote is he wrote that the young men and women in the West, they're used to living together. So it's all, that's another reason why it's necessary, because they were that they're so much used to living together. If there's only men in an ashram or only women in an ashram, then maybe the others don't want to join. Where are the women? Maybe thinking like that. Prabhupada indicated. So it may be for all our staunch brahmacharya. We don't like that woman either. So Prabhupada, to create a facility in which the spirit of the Shastra, which is Smartavya Satyatam Krishna, always to think of Krishna, that people can become Krishna conscious, he allowed something which was unprecedented, actually. There's no precedent for this. And there's no direction for it in Shastra. And then how to behave? There's no direction in Shastra. Then what to do? Then we have to see what Prabhupada said. Because he says, well, he's the founder of Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So Prabhupada has given guidelines. He many times emphasized that women, they should be married. Of course, he also said that men shouldn't be married. So the brahmachari, he always recommended, don't get married. I just, some conversation he heard where one devotee was saying to Prabhupada, that Prabhupada, one man, said, Prabhupada, I think I should get married. He was giving so many, I think I'd be more happy, be better situated, it's more natural for me. So Prabhupada said, you won't be happy. And then he went on, but Prabhupada said, If you like, you can do, but you won't be him. And anyway, he got married and he wasn't happy. The Prabhupada is very strongly recommending that men, you preach. Preach Krishna consciousness, be brahmacharis. You preach and pray to Krishna, and then you tolerate this itching. You quote Prahlad Maharaj, sexual attraction is like an itch. If you scratch it, it gets worse, more. So there's a direction in Shastra. Prahlad Maharaj, 5-year-old boy, was telling us that we should tolerate this itching. So Prabhupada is saying, you preach, you pray to Krishna, and you can overcome this itching. So Prabhupada is saying that all the men should remain unmarried, all the women should get married, and when the devotee is asked, how is that possible, Prabhupada? Says that is your management. You consider how to do it. It's a quandary, dilemma. What to do? But anyway, here we are all today, living in temples, and there are brahmacharinis. Shastra also directs that we're supposed to see all women except our wife as mother. Matrivat paradarisha, we should see all women as our mother, not our own wife also. Sometimes devotees come to me and say, this is my matter. They mean to say it's my wife, but actually they're saying it's my mother. Really? She's your mother? What position? Prabhupada condemned that, this rascal, so-called Ramakrishna. He used to address his wife as the divine mother. Prabhupada explained that by the time he got married, he already had sex so many times he'd become impotent. As a pretense, he called his wife the mother because he wasn't capable of having sex anymore. So Prabhupada, he rejected. Why? It's nonsense. You call your wife mother. Wife is wife. Of course, she also may be like a mother in some way. That's also stated in Shastra. She may be like, sometimes like a mother, sometimes like a friend, and sometimes like Rambha. Rambha means, in Prabhupada's language, a heavenly society girl. So, according to different circumstances, she may have different functions. But anyway, the function of a wife and the function of a mother is different. So one is enjoined to see, of course, it's stated in Shastra, Chanakya. Chanakya's slokas, they're all collected from Shastra. So, Matrivat Paradareshu Yapashyati Sapanditaha. One is considered a learned person if he sees all other women except his own wife as mother. Of course, it's understood that all women are sons. In traditional society, they'll all be married anyway. But anyway, that consciousness should be there. If one, as Prabhupada also spoke against the practice which is most common in India today, of calling most women as sister, except if they're older. They're quite old, they may call them mata, otherwise they call them sister. Prabhupada very much criticized this. He said, this is not according to Shastra. That is not proper. If you think sister, that means you can have like close, friendly relationship. But mother, also you can have close, friendly, but it's very respectful. So the idea that we're all brothers and sisters, that's also there. Prabhupada said that the Tamil president should be like father to the devotees and wife like mother, presuming the Tamil president's caste. But basically, relationships between men and women should be, actually, they shouldn't be, not much at all. Only, as Prabhupada explained, the brahmacharis, they should. Mixed with women only what is necessary. That's all. Not that let's sit down and read Krishna book together. I say it's very spiritual. No, you can read Krishna book with the other brahmacharis or the brahmacharinis. That's also spiritual. Because the day, you may think, well, it's a, you know, it's a very brother-sister kind of relationship, but the Shastra warns. We have to be very, very careful. Shastra warns, Manu and Bhagavatam also both give the same verse, that we shouldn't sit close. What is that verse? How does that come? I can't remember exactly how it goes. An important verse, how am I not remembering? That one should not sit close or remain alone with even one's Navivikdasana or Bhavet, even with one's mother, sister or daughter. Because Balavan Indriagramo, the senses are very strong. And Vidvam Shama Vikamshati, even a learned person, his mind can be disturbed. Now Prabhupada commented on this, that Vidvan, even someone who's very learned in Shastra, who's a very respectable person, is not, you may say, well, who will be disturbed sitting next to his mother, sister or daughter? You have to be a complete rascal. But Prabhupada, commenting on this verse, said, Vidvan, even one is very learned, the senses are so strong that even in association with one's mother, sister or daughter, he may be disturbed. And he gave example is there, Brahma. Even such a respectable person, but you have to be very pious to get the position of Brahma. But even he was disturbed upon seeing his daughter. So the injunction in Shastra is that one has to be very, very careful in one's dealings. And even if one is thinking that this is a very spiritual dealing, I'm sitting this, and here I am, young brahmachari, and I'm sitting with this young brahmacharini, and we have such a spiritual relationship. Even if it's for service or whatever it may be, the tendency is there. Vidvan samabhikashti. Even that tendency may very subtly change towards something which is improper. That's why we see in Vedic culture that I think if you've seen that book of mine, that Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, one of the devotees was explaining that his father used to have study upstairs, and his daughter, means his father's daughter, namely the devotee Rasaraj Prabhu's sister, used to every day in the afternoon bring him upstairs. I think in the book it says a cup of milk, but actually he explained to me after the book was printed, actually it was a cup of coffee, but he didn't want to say. He's from the Sri Vaishnava family, so somehow or other, I think all the Sri Vaishnavas drink coffee. Anyway, they're nice devotees mostly. So he told me that one day his father asked his daughter, that, how old are you now? She said, 12 years old. He said, then from tomorrow you don't bring me this anymore. Your mother should. Because that he's from a respectable family, and such things are not known in respectable families that there should be any such malpractice. But still, one of the features of their being a respectable family is that they're so careful in this regard. Very, very careful. Very, very stringent. So, we're in a very different situation, especially in a temple like this, where it's a very crowded situation. I also joined in it. Well, I joined in Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, and then I moved to Berry Place Temple, which is very crowded. I think the first day I came, there were 80 devotees living in some small building, and the stairs were like very, very narrow, and all the time there were men and women both going up the stairs. So, it's, but there wasn't, at least I didn't perceive, there was no lusty feelings were not being exacerbated, because everyone was thinking how to serve Krishna nicely. That was the mood and the attitude. But you just see what a different situation it is. It's just actually the opposite of the situation that's described in Shastra. How Shastra much emphasizes there should be separation of the sexes. But here we see that due to circumstances, that we may be living more closely to the opposite sex than we ever did even before we joined the movement. So there has to be a very strong spiritual atmosphere, one of service to Krishna, and proper decorum. Decorum, you know what that means? How can we explain that? Decorum means carefulness and proper behavior. Careful, very careful to be properly behave and following certain principles, reserve in one's dealings. Otherwise, that's what karmis, they often think. They see, oh, Hare Krishna people, see so many men and women all living together. Sometimes they think, in India they thought when Prabhupada's disciples first came to the they thought, you see, young men and women. They presumed, because if they were in such a situation, what they would be doing. So they presumed that there would be some malpractice. So the danger is there. The danger is certainly there, but the atmosphere has to be maintained in the temple, that we're all here to serve Krishna, and it's natural attraction. Natural means it's unnatural, we're in Maya. But it seems like it's natural because we're in the material nature. So that that natural attraction doesn't become unnecessarily inflamed, then we should be very respectful in our dealings with the opposite sex. Prabhupada said that when he was asked how the brahmachari should deal with the brahmacharinis, he said different things at different times. One time he said you should not see these women as sex objects, you should see them as gopis who have come to serve Krishna. That's one thing he said. Then he was asked how the brahmachari should address the matter. They should address as my dear mother, very respectful. And the mother should address as son. So these are some guidelines that there should be some reserve and respect. As Prabhupada writes here, one should be very careful in dealing with worshipful family members to maintain the proper atmosphere. Otherwise, very quickly, everything can degenerate into a completely materialistic kind of atmosphere. So we have to be very, very careful. This is being suggested here. Any questions about this?
Nowadays, we hear that these days when Prabhupada was planned, it was like a pioneer this, and now we are developing some experience. And now that this now ashram should be more brahminical, and that just leave a few brahmanas outside vihastas come.
Well, Prabhupada always wanted his centers to be for brahminically inclined people. He said that we are training up people as brahmanas. Although Prabhupada didn't reject anyone who wanted. If someone was illiterate, Prabhupada wouldn't reject that you can't join our temple because you can't study Shastra, you know. Or if someone had a Shudra kind of nature, Prabhupada wouldn't reject anyone. Even in India, Prabhupada quite often said that we should be preaching to and trying to attract the higher class of people. There's more difference in India because many people are completely uneducated, and then there are the very high class people who are really high class as we can imagine in the West. So, in the West, we think someone who's very puffed up. But when I say high class in India, we often find that they're very, very humble. It's part of their being high class. So that was always Prabhupada's idea that those who are more brahminical, they should live in our centers. Although he also wanted rural communities where all kinds of people could live in Varnashram. All live a simple life. So if we had established such communities, then it would certainly be more practicable for city centers, only for the brahmanas. That means those who are preaching and teaching to live. We should do that. And then, yeah. Yes, that was part of Prabhupada's vision. Preaching centers, temples in the cities, they should be centers of high spiritual Brahminical culture. Not that the rural community shouldn't be, but that but just like in a temple in the city, we don't have so much. It's a different concept. In the village, Prabhupada wanted self-sufficiency. That means there would be simple living based on the natural products. So there's need for blacksmiths, weavers, different kinds of artisans. These are shooter occupations. So there's much not that scope for that in the city. There may be mechanics. Prabhupada, he gave certain guidelines. One thing also, this is a controversial point I'm going to make now, because different people have different opinions about this. Because it said that we should, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Kariya Oika Ana Kariha Mone Asha, that we should accept the words of the spiritual master as they are and worship them and fix them up in our heart and not desire anything else. My understanding is that Prabhupada had an ideal of Krishna consciousness, which he in the philosophy and he explained from Shastra. But as far as the social organization, he gave some guidelines, but it's not that it's absolutely rigid. I mean, even Prabhupada himself, social organization, an organization of our society, and Prabhupada himself said that we should study the Catholic Church to see how they organize. He also said that we could study the Ramakrishna mission, and Prabhupada hated Ramakrishna. I mean, Ramakrishna, Prabhupada really didn't like him at all. But he appreciated that they have some good points of organization. So he said we could study them to see how they organize their society. So, as far as I can see, Prabhupada was somewhat flexible in the matter of organization. Just like he allowed young women to live in the ashrams, which is unheard of, but for the sake of bringing out Krishna consciousness, he allowed that. Now, that doesn't. I'm not advocating that we have a complete license to change everything that Prabhupada instituted. But at the same time, I think we haven't come to the establishing the Varnashram society that Prabhupada wanted, and there may be various stages that we have to go through, and we have to adjust according to the circumstances. Just like Prabhupada was saying, self-sufficient communities, then the devotees were saying, well, at this stage we don't think we're capable, we're not ready to just have only working with cows and bulls. We need some tractors for worship, because they've got large plots of land in America, hundreds of hectares. So Prabhupada said, yes, okay, for now you use tractors, but then you move towards non-mechanized or non-petrol-based economy. So, keeping Prabhupada's directions in mind, there is some scope to adjust to the present circumstances, I feel. I don't think that we can. Just like it was being discussed yesterday, that Prabhupada first had 12 GBCs and then he made 20. Some say, well, when Prabhupada left, there were only 20 GBCs, so that should be it forever. But then even the GBC themselves, they expanded up to about 35 or something. And they found a necessity to do so. Prabhupada expanded from 12 to 20. So my personal feeling is that some adjustment can be made within the framework and the guidelines that Prabhupada set up. And it's not that points of social organization, there's so much rigid that the details may be adjusted. Well, the basic principles should be there. So that's basically just like, for instance, one thing, very strong point in Vedic culture, it's a rigid principle. There is no scope within Shastra, nor any Acharya has allowed any such thing as divorce. So that's a very... It's nothing to do with spiritual life, whether you get divorced. I mean, it's to do with the social interaction of bodies. But nevertheless, it's so important that Shastras, almost anyway, chant Hare Krishna, but we don't encourage that. Yes, yes, it's okay. If you want a divorce, it's okay. So it requires some fine intelligence. That's why we also need gurus. There's some discussion that, well, Prabhupada was the last guru, just like the Sikhs, they had the last guru was Guru Gobind Singh, and they worship the book, and he's the last guru. But gurus are always required in human society to give direction according to previous guru, sadhu, and shastra, without deviating from guru, sadhu, and shastra, to give appropriate direction according to the particular circumstance. And in most cases, it will be straightforward. In many cases, not so straightforward. Here, this whole discussion is going on because great personalities, namely Bhima and Arjuna on one side and Draupadi and Yudhishthira on another, they have a disagreement on how to execute the principles of religion in this particular circumstance of whether or not Ashwatthama should be killed. So they're all great personalities, they all have full faith in Shastra, they all are pure devotees of Krishna, but they have a difference of opinion how to execute the matter of Shastra. So dharma is sukshma, it's very fine. So how to implement it, therefore it's required that there be gurus, and a guru is not simply a position that, well, you know, he's a Prabhupada disciple, so therefore it must be a guru. But it means actually it's required. What is it? Achinot ishastrani, achare sthapyatyapi. Then what's the next line? Swayam acharate yasmat, acharyas tena kirtita. What is an acharya is described in Shastra. That he teaches according to Shastra, he establishes the principles of religion according to Shastra, and he personally acts according to Shastra. So such a person is called an acharya. They're required. It's required in human society, and more so among devotees. And there may be differences of opinion between acharyas also on the details. As Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, there may, the basic principles are the same everywhere, but in details there may be differences of opinion. And different gurus may instruct their disciples differently on the details. For instance, one guru may instruct his disciples, you must all chant 25 rounds on the Kaddish. Someone else may say, well, if you're busy preaching or you're too busy anyway, then you don't have to. Actually, Prabhupada said that when he was asked about 25 rounds on the Kaddish. He was asked, should all the devotees in the temple chant 25 rounds? Prabhupada said, those who are sitting in the temple doing nothing, they can chant. And those who are going out for preaching, they should chant 16 rounds and go for preaching. So there may be different. Some gurus instruct their disciples, you must chant 25 rounds on the Kaddish because Prabhupada instructed them to do. So they instruct their disciples. So there may be some detail, but the basic principles, everyone must chant at least 16 rounds a day. And other things, there may be some details of difference. But then on principles, one cannot violate the principles of Shastra and still be a guru. He cannot say, yes, it's okay to divorce. Then he's not teaching according to Shastra. And his qualification as guru is finished. That is his qualification. Oh, there are some other questions. Yeah, it seems to be natural because we're in Maya. But our real nature is to be attracted to Krishna. What about a grihastha? Well, they're not in Maya. They are cooperating together to serve Krishna. because family unit is very pleasing. Krishna enjoys his pastimes like that. The relationship of mother to son is there. So mother to son means there also has to be a husband. And Krishna has his cowherd boyfriends. They also have their mothers and fathers. Ah, yeah, that's why the Krishna conscious movement is formed for that purpose. To create the spiritual world within the material world. But that means when everyone is fully focused on Krishna. That's the aim. But like I was saying, even among ideal or very serious devotees, that Maya is so strong that at any time that the affection can be contaminated by some material affection. That's why I was saying that the father was telling the daughter, naturally he's affectionate towards his daughter, and he doesn't have any bad intention towards her, but just to guard that any such thing might happen, so then you don't bring the milk to me anymore. You have to be very careful not to mix spiritual affection with material affection. That also leads to another point, actually, that another point in is traditionally, you see, the brahmacharis live in the gurukul. Then they go home and they get married. And then their wives, in different tradition, the wife may be initiated or not initiated. When she's married, that's also considered her initiation, because the husband's initiated and she becomes the follower of the husband. So she's, in many traditions, the women are not initiated, but it's considered when they get married, that's equivalent to their initiation. So traditionally, the gurus, either householders or sannyasis, who are gurus, would instruct the men, who would then instruct their wives. And the wives would also be instructed by the elder women, and like this. So there wasn't direct instruction from guru to female disciple. Even one disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told me that when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave Harinam, means what we call first initiation, to his wife, he did so through a screen. He had a bamboo screen. That was normal. In the meetings, when there were religious meetings, there was the normal thing, that there would be a screen, and men would be one side and the women would be behind. They wouldn't see each other. They were so strict. So even he was giving initiation, but he didn't see her. He just said, "Here, Chan Hare Krishna." So there was so. Now it's a different situation in the modern age. It's a different situation in the modern age, where young women are living like brahmacharis. We call them brahmacharin. And brahmachari serves the guru, and brahmacharini, they also want to serve, but there are some restrictions that is required. And naturally, although there's an affectionate feeling, Prabhupada used to address in his letters, he used to address his female disciples as daughter. So that, and he said also that female disciple is in the same status as daughter. So there's affection. But just like the effect this, I was saying, Rasaraja's father, saying, all right, there's affection, but some care should be there also, because even we see Lord Brahma, what to speak of anyone else, he felt some attraction even for his daughter. So it's, you have to be very careful to see that the affection is there, and it's a spiritual relationship. After all, we're not men and we're not women, we're all women in relationship with Krishna. We're all Prakriti in relation to the supreme enjoyer, who is Krishna. But some caution has to be there also. Otherwise, as we have unfortunately seen within our movement, without caution, even in dealings, even in a spiritual relationship, between guru and female disciple, there can be some
can turn to material affection. We've seen some disasters. So you have to be very aware of these things.
Cautious. Goes back to Godhead. We don't say it about this time.
Objašnjeno je kako je Višnu molio Krišnu da stane pokraj njega, da ga može vidjeti, ako bi imao pravilnu viziju.
It's getting late. It's nothing to do with the class, let's just finish. Keep it for another time. Otherwise there are unlimited questions. Which is nice, but we also have